The biggest advancement has been the in utero closures of the open back, that being able to close that back early in gestation has a significant impact on the outcome of children with spina bifida.
Spina bifida affects about 1,400 babies born each year. Children with the most severe forms of the condition can have difficulty walking, bowel and bladder issues, and many other complications. The Multidisciplinary Spina Bifida Center at Ann and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital of Chicago provides comprehensive care for children and adolescents with spina bifida and other types of congenital spinal anomalies, from prenatal consultation through young adulthood. Our guest today is Dr. Robin Bowman, who leads the center. She is a neurosurgeon who sometimes performs a surgery on babies diagnosed with spina bifida before they are even born, helping improve the prognosis for the child. We talk with her today about the latest in spina bifida treatment and care. This is Precision, Perspectives on Children's Surgery. I'm Maggie McKay. Welcome, Dr. Bowman. It's a pleasure to have you here. Thank you for setting aside the time. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure being here.
Will you please introduce yourself and tell us your specialty?
I'm Robin Bowman. I'm a pediatric neurosurgeon here at Lurie Children's in Chicago, and I'm director for our Multidisciplinary Spina Bifida Center and for Fetal Neurosurgery at the Chicago Institute for Fetal Health.
And to begin, what exactly is spina bifida and how common is it?
Spina bifida is a complex congenital abnormality of the nervous system where the baby forms with the spinal cord open and exposed, which can lead to abnormalities related to that exposed spinal cord as well as abnormalities throughout the nervous system.
And how common is it?
It occurs approximately in 1,400 to 1,500 babies per year in the United States.
How does it affect the children who have it?
For children with open spina bifida, when they're forming in the womb very early in mother's pregnancy, within the first 3 weeks of the pregnancy, the spinal cord itself never closes. And so if you can envision, the spinal cord comes down usually into the lower back region and kind of opens up like a flower, and the bottom of the spinal cord is attached to the skin, which puts the child at risk for weakness in the legs and in the bowel and bladder function. But I think you can probably imagine that it's not a normal or typical situation for the brain and spinal cord to be developing when the bottom end of the spinal cord is exposed and leaking spinal fluid. So it sets the baby up for additional complications throughout the nervous system. In particular, they can have an increased risk of hydrocephalus, or the fluid accumulating in the brain, and they also have something known as a Chiari 2, where the brain tissue in the back part of our brain almost hugs our brain stem, which can lead to abnormalities at times in some of our brain stem's functions that have to do with our swallowing and breathing.
When is it normally diagnosed?
Spina bifida is usually noted early in the mother's pregnancy when she goes through her 20-week ultrasound. They can pick up abnormalities in the brain as well as the open defect in the lower spine region.
Well, the Chicago Institute for Fetal Health at Lurie Children's specializes in care for pregnant patients with complications. You're the co-director of fetal neurosurgery for that clinic. What is your role when patients with unborn babies have spina bifida and they come to you?
We commonly meet the mothers around 20 weeks gestation, and we sit down and we meet them as a team so that all of us are there, myself in neurosurgery, my fetal team, my fetal surgeon, the maternal fetal medicine or obstetricians are there, as well as the neonatologists and our nursing care and our social workers. And we sit down, and the first time that we meet, we talk about just what is the disease and what is the possible impact of the disease on the child long term. And then at our subsequent meeting, which we call our phase two meeting, we talk about ways in which the care has changed through the years, that for many years the care was to close the back after the baby was born. Since 2011, when a study demonstrated an improvement in some of the outcome measures for children with open spina bifida when they went through in utero surgery, we also talk about the possibility of the mother if she and the baby are a candidate for fetal surgery.
Tell us more about the surgical options for these pregnant patients with their unborn babies. What does that surgery look like, and how does it help the patients?
So it's known as in utero surgery or fetal surgery, as you said, and there are certain inclusion and exclusion criteria for the mother and for the fetus. So it's not for every mother, and it comes at risk. I think you can envision that it's not a typical situation for a gravid uterus to go through surgery. And so it carries risk to the mother and for preterm labor or premature rupture of membranes and other risk, and carries the risk of preterm birth for the fetus. And so the surgery itself is to open the mother's abdomen, expose the uterus, and today, many of our mothers opt for the fetoscopic approach, where we put in three 3.5-millimeter ports, so little ports into the uterus, and then we work through those ports to close the baby's back. That's usually done around 24 to 25 weeks gestation.
And how does that help the patients? Does that solve the problem, or is there a surgical option once the baby's born?
As we stress during our meetings with the family, before the family decides if they want to proceed with fetal surgery, there's nothing that I'm able to offer them that cures this disease, that this is a disease that we manage throughout the patient's lifetime, and this is a management decision that carries benefits but also carries risk. The benefits that were reported in that randomized control trial back in 2011 showed that there's an improvement statistically in the strength of the lower extremities for the children that go through in utero closure, that there's less of a risk for need of treatment for hydrocephalus or that fluid that accumulates in the brain, and an improvement in the Chiari malformation, which is where that cerebellum or that brain tissue that we all have in the back part of our brain kind of hugs our brain stem. With early closure of the back in a majority of children, that cerebellum kind of floats away from the brain stem and there's much more room in the back part. And so improvement in that Chiari.
The Spina Bifida Center is a multidisciplinary care team. What kind of specialists are on it, and how does it differ from other Spina Bifida centers for kids?
As I stress with all of our families when I meet them initially at our phase one counseling, is that there's not a single doctor that is a specialist in all areas of taking care of a child with spina bifida. And so it requires a team, and it requires a team that partners with the family and eventually with the patient in order to give that patient the best possible outcome. And so although I'm the neurosurgeon, so I'm the doctor that takes care of closing the back and treating the hydrocephalus and perhaps treating that Chiari, that snug compression of the brainstem, if a treatment would be needed, I partner and rely heavily upon my other members of the spina bifida team, our urologist, our pediatric urologist, our pediatric orthopedic surgeons, our rehab medicine doctors, our developmental pediatrician, our neuropsychologists, our nursing team, our therapists, our social work, all of us work together to establish what the child's baseline is and then work with the family and eventually the child to maintain that baseline or help them improve throughout childhood. And so it takes all of us working together to give the best possible care for a child with open spina bifida.
And you mentioned that this is something they will have throughout their lifetime. So how long does the Lurie Children's Spina Bifida team follow a child with the condition?
Our center is one of the longest running clinics nationally. We started back in the mid-1970s with Dr. Raimondi and then Dr. McClone, and we are a strong, robust center today. We follow the children throughout childhood and into early adulthood and are helping them then transition into adult care. Once they are established and have finished their higher education, we help them get established fully into adult care.
That must be so rewarding to see a baby grow up into adulthood that you helped improve their lives.
It is rewarding. It's the best part of the job. There's nothing more heartwarming than knowing a little one with this disease that has some significant disabilities that are associated with it, and to see the different hurdles that the kids have to overcome, both them and their families, and then to see them achieve and graduate from college, it's very heartwarming. I'm very proud of my patients and their family.
When you look back 10, 20 years, Dr. Bowman, how has treatment for spina bifida advanced?
The biggest advancement has been the in utero closures of the open back. That being able to close that back early in gestation has a significant impact on the outcome of children with spina bifida, at least what we know for the early outcome into early childhood. And that's what we have seen in our children, that there's a significant improvement in the strength of the lower extremities, more so than I would have ever predicted. There's less of a need for intervening or for treatment of hydrocephalus, and just a remarkable improvement in the imaging of their brain. Previously, prior to in utero closures, I could look at an imaging of the brain of a child with open spina bifida, and no one would have to tell me that they had open spina bifida. I knew it by their imaging. Today, for many of my children that are closed in utero, I would not know that they have open spina bifida based upon their MRI.
Wow. Can you tell us about your background, how you became an expert in this condition?
I went into neurosurgery because of my interest in pediatric neurosurgery. And fortunately, very early in my residency, I encountered patients with spina bifida, and it intrigued me. It is a very tough disease. It's the most complex congenital abnormality of the nervous system that's compatible with long-term survival. And I've always wanted to work with children. They're amazing. They're resilient. They take on anything, and they just want to play and have fun. I've always had an interest in pediatric neurosurgery, but it was really spina bifida that was my primary interest. And it was the reason I came to Lurie, which was back in the late 90s, was known as Children's Memorial here in Chicago. And I came here to train because of the spina bifida center here at Lurie. And I was fortunate enough to stay on and eventually become director of our program.
Is there a moment in the OR or clinic that really encapsulates why you do what you do?
I think the thing that just warms my heart and brings a smile to my face is when I see kids achieving, knowing that our team was able to help them, whether it's our fetal team, and I see a little baby who's, had they gone to postnatal closure, they wouldn't have movement in their legs, and I see movement in their legs, in their hips, in their knees, and in their feet. I love that because I know that although we can't cure this disease, we're giving them the best possible chance. Or if I have one of my school-age kids who, even though they have disabilities, even though they may be walking with braces or have forearm crutches, they're out, they're achieving, they're participating in their dance or their cheerleading or their soccer or sled hockey is a big sport for many of the kids that I follow. Or recently, he's no longer little. I think of him as little. He was one of my original babies back in the late 90s, and he recently graduated from college. I'm so proud of them because this is a tough disease, and I love when our team, is able to help the kids overcome the burden of this disease and just get out there and be kids.
And can you share with us your research into pediatric spina bifida with the Stanley Manny Children's Research Institute? How does it translate to patient care?
My research is clinically based, and we're very focused on looking at our outcomes. We participate in the National Spina Bifida Patient Registry, which is a registry of patients throughout the nation, and we're one of the larger centers where we have some of the most patients participating in the registry, where we really want to track the outcomes of the kids and help standardize the care across the nation. Recently, my spina bifida team just published on the care of children with myelocystocele, which is a form of spina bifida. It's a rare form, and we were able to publish the largest cohort of children treated in the U.S., and it's a terrific report that shows that these children with this very complex abnormality of their spinal cord can really do very well and have good strength long-term, have a majority of them have good control of their bowel and bladder. And it's really a compliment to the whole team because, again, there's not a single one of us that can do it alone. We have to work together with the families, with the patient, in order to give them the best possible outcome. And so I think it really highlights that multidisciplinary care. The other area that we're working to advance is in our fetal care. Some of the researchers are working to develop some more intensive wireless cardiorespiratory monitoring of the fetus. So there's a lot of work that's done on both ends on improving the care, especially for the fetus, and in tracking our outcome long term.
You've mentioned your team several times. Where do you turn to when you have questions about a case or a procedure?
Well, of course, my spina bifida team, I talk through things. From a neurosurgical perspective, I have terrific colleagues right here in Chicago. And nationally, there's a small group of us that are involved with the CDC in the registry study. And we're not bashful about emailing each other, calling each other, and talking through different cases. And so I rely heavily upon my small group of colleagues within pediatric neurosurgery who have a special interest in spina bifida have been very helpful to me throughout the years.
That's great to have that network for each other.
Absolutely. I always say, you know, if only the kids would come with how-to books. When I do this, you do that. Unfortunately, they don't.
Wouldn't that be awesome? In closing, doctor, what gives you hope for babies and children with spina bifida?
I am so pleased by the outcomes that I have seen for the children that have gone through the in utero surgery that has really helped to lessen the burden of this disease. And so I'm very optimistic that we can continue to improve our surgical options and continue to improve the outcome for this disease. So even though we can't offer a cure for this disease, I do think that we can help lessen the burden of it.
Dr. Bowman, this has been so educational because I imagine it's a lot of information for a parent to take in when their child is diagnosed. So thank you for explaining what the latest in spina bifida treatment and care is at Lurie Children's, and thank you for your work.
Thank you so much for inviting me today.
To learn more, visit luriechildrens.org/spina bifida, or to make an appointment, call 1-800-KIDS-DOC. If you found this podcast helpful, please share it on your social channels and check out the full podcast library for topics of interest to you. I'm your host, Maggie McKay.